This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. While many expected a bare-knuckle fight over President Bush's first Supreme Court nominee, the first couple of weeks after the nomination of Judge John Roberts were pretty quiet. Well, now the gloves are off. Yesterday, an ad sponsored by NARAL Pro-Choice America attacked Judge Roberts' record. We'll let you hear the ad in a moment. It's prompted a counter-ad. We'll let you hear that as well. And we'll talk with the director of factcheck.org about the accuracy of the ads and just how they determine that. Also, David Savage of the Los Angeles Times will join us. We'll ask whether this is likely to have any effect on the confirmation and find out what the latest tranche of Roberts' memos tells us about the nominee. But first, attack ads. Do they work? Does it matter if they're accurate or fair? And whether it's the Swift Boat veterans or this new NARAL ad, do you cringe when your side lets slip the dogs of ad war? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Later in the program, we'll talk with our baseball pal Alan Schwartz about Rafael Palmeiro of the Baltimore Orioles. He returns to the game tonight after serving a 10-day suspension for use of steroids, a case that may end up in charges of contempt of Congress. But first, attack ads, and we'll begin with Brooks Jackson, director of factcheck.org at the University of Pennsylvania's Public Policy Center. That's set up specifically to monitor the accuracy of political ads. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil.
And let's begin with the ad sponsored by NARAL Pro-Choice America.
7 years ago, a bomb destroyed a woman's health clinic in Birmingham, Alabama.
When a bomb ripped through my clinic, I almost lost my life. I will never be the same.
Supreme Court nominee John Roberts filed court briefs supporting violent fringe groups and a convicted clinic bomber.
I am determined to stop this violence, so I'm speaking out.
Call your senators. Tell them to oppose John Roberts. America can't afford a justice whose ideology leads him to excuse violence against other Americans.
Brooks Jackson, you've said that ad is false. How so?
Well, that's our judgment at the at factcheck.org. The total message created by that ad, of course, is that Judge Roberts somehow supported bombers and violent fringe groups and excused violence of the sort that you're seeing. And the images are very powerful. You're mm-hmm. seeing a devastated, the results of a bombing of an abortion clinic in Birmingham. In fact, Judge Roberts said during the oral arguments in this case that he did not excuse the behavior of these people. The case had turned on other issues. And he said on other occasions that abortion clinic bombers are criminals who should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. So his actual position is the opposite of what it's portrayed as being in this ad.
What about the visuals?
The visuals are quite powerful. They come from a bombing that happened actually 7 years after the briefs in question, and that's one misleading aspect of this. Eric Rudolph was convicted of that bombing. He's in prison now and had nothing to do with the case they're talking about in that ad.
Mm-hmm. You further use the phrase guilt by association. What do you mean by that?
Well, in this case, Judge Roberts, working as in the Solicitor General's office, filed a friend of the court brief. He wasn't representing these folks. He was taking the same side in a case that had nothing to do with bombing. Bombing was never mentioned. It had to do with whether an 1871 statute could be stretched to cover abortion blockaders who were blocking access to abortion clinics. Everybody agreed, including Judge Roberts, these were criminal activities. They violated state trespass laws, for example. The issue was whether it was a federal case or not. Supreme Court ruled eventually 6-3 that Judge Roberts, now Judge Roberts' arguments were correct, and subsequently Congress passed a law that was specifically aimed at that sort of blockading. Mm-hmm. So to say that what the ad implies is that Judge Roberts supported the activities of violent groups and the activities of bombers and the groups themselves. He did not.
Mm-hmm. We invited Nancy Keenan, the president of NARAL Pro-Choice America, to come on the program or send a spokesperson to be with us. They did not have anybody who had the time today on relatively short notice to join us. But this is what she said in response to the allegations yesterday on All Things Considered on NPR News.
I think he had a choice. And I think that when he had a choice to do nothing and not enter into this case, he had a choice to side with the attorney generals, or he had a choice to side with those fringe violent groups. And he chose to side with the fringe violent groups. That says something about a person's ideology and belief system.
Your response to that?
Well, first of all, let me tell you something else Nancy Keenan said at her news conference when she announced this ad. She said, and I'm quoting now, "I want to be very clear that we are not suggesting that Mr. Roberts condones or supports clinic violence. I know he said he finds bombing and murder abhorrent," and yet their ad says exactly that, that he excused violence and supported these groups.
Well, what about her point? This was an amicus brief. The administration wasn't a party in either case. They decided to take this option, and she said...
True, and we've said in our article that that NARAL would have been perfectly justified in saying that Judge Roberts argued for a legal position with which they disagreed, and that some people, including three of the nine Supreme Court justices, said that that position might open the door to mob violence, to use the phrase of Justice O'Connor, who Judge mm-hmm. Roberts would replace. But that's not what they said in the ad. They went far beyond that and suggested that he supported bombers and violence and the sorts of devastation that's being pictured in that ad.
I have to ask you, mostly your group monitors political advertising. I guess it certainly falls into that category, but it must have been a pretty thin summer waiting for this round of ads.
Well, it hasn't been as active as it was back in September and October of last year. In the election year, we were filing maybe three or four articles a week. Now it's about one article a week. But there's been a lot of advertising on Social Security, and we've already seen the first ad of the attack ad of the next year's Senate campaign. We just filed an article on that one, an ad in West Virginia.
So anyway, as a rule, does your group find that ads are quote-unquote false?
We don't do that very often. That's about as strong as we get, and I think we're very judicious in the way we apply that. I'll give you an example of the kind of ad in the past that's triggered that judgment from us. There was a National Rifle Association ad during the 2004 election that said that John Kerry had co-sponsored legislation to outlaw deer hunting ammunition. Well, you read the bill was, and it was a bill that would have outlawed ammunition designed and marketed as armor-piercing ammunition. So we characterize that as false. That's the kind of it's got to be that bad before we'll use that word.
We're talking about attack ads. Do they work? 800-989-8255. Email us TOTN@npr.org. And Scott joins us on the phone. Scott calling from Iron River in Wisconsin.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I guess I don't fully disagree with attack ads. I think they are useful if they do bring out the truth. I am greatly opposed to those who on either end of the spectrum, the far right or the far left, when they twist and turn facts into falsehoods. And it seems to me that there really isn't anything that happens. And I'm wondering if your guest could comment on a question that I have. Do you see any possibility or future legal recourse when ads are actually found out to be out-and-out lies or false?
Well, you're not quite the ad police, but go ahead, Brooks Jones.
Well, in fact, there's an article on our website that I wrote over a year ago on this very question that a lot of people are disturbed to find that the kinds of protections that are written into federal law against false commercial advertising by toy makers or car manufacturers or whatever don't apply to politics, not to candidates, not to groups like these. But a few states have tried truth in political advertising laws and found them very difficult to get supported by the courts and even more difficult to support to enforce in any meaningful way. And the reason is that at the end of the day, it comes down to a government official somewhere making a judgment about whether a statement is true or false, and that's probably a matter better left up to the news media and to citizens and voters.
Scott, thanks very much.
Thank you.
In response to the NARAL ad, a group called the Progress for America Voter Fund released a counter ad. Let's listen to that.
When John Roberts was nominated, he was met with wide praise from Republicans and Democrats, but with little to attack in Roberts' superb record, liberals are taking the low road. What newspapers call a witch hunt. A far-left Democratic group is making a desperate and false attack, recklessly distorting Judge Roberts' record. But the Senate unanimously approved Judge Roberts after a thorough review of his record just 2 years ago. How low can these frustrated liberals sink?
Brooks Jackson, response to that? Have you had a chance to look at it?
We have. We looked that over. It's about 98% opinion, and clearly opinion, of course. The one thing that we might quibble with when they say that Judge Roberts was unanimously confirmed by the Senate, it is true that when his nomination came on the Senate floor, it went through by unanimous consent, a convention that means basically nobody's going to oppose it. But there had been three Democratic votes against him in the Judiciary Committee when it was reported out. Had it come to anybody wanted to push it to a roll call vote, one can assume there would have been at least three, mm-hmm. maybe a few more votes against him at that point. But that's such a minor quibble that at this point we aren't devoting a separate article to that particular ad. But we review them, believe me.
When we come back from a short break, we're going to be speaking with Ben Ginsberg, who's the counsel for this group, the Progress for America Voter Front. They run a lot of ads. What's their track record?
Well, we've had critical things to say about some of their ads in the past.
How have they responded?
I don't believe that I've heard from them.
Well, maybe we'll get a response later today. Brooks Jackson, thanks very much for being with us. We appreciate your time today. Brooks Jackson, director of FatCheck.org, a project of the University of Pennsylvania's Public Policy Center. He was kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A. When we return, we will be speaking about attack ads and taking your calls. Do they work? We'll also be talking about the John Roberts memos that are out. And about those that are not, at least not yet. And we'll take your calls at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address, TOTN@NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The group called NARAL Pro-Choice America fired up an advertising campaign this week aimed at Supreme Court nominee John Roberts. Legal arguments he made in favor of abortion clinic protesters when he was Deputy Solicitor General for the first Bush White House. The ad was criticized by FatCheck.org as false, as you heard earlier. And today, the top-ranking Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee, Senator Patrick Leahy, called for it to be withdrawn. You can join the conversation as well. Do these types of ads have an impact on you? If you agree with the point of view, do you also agree with the tactics? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. As mentioned earlier, we invited NARAL Pro-Choice America to send a representative. They declined the opportunity. Joining us now is Ben Ginsberg, counsel for the group Progress for America and Progress for America Voter Fund. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks, Neil. Nice to be with you.
And we heard a little bit of the counter ad that your group has put on. We heard the entire thing a few moments ago. What do you hope to achieve by running that?
Well, first of all, let me say I think we wished we didn't have to run the ad. But frankly, a charge like that, as you mentioned, Fact Check said was false and misleading, allowed to sit out there in this debate, can frame the issue in a false and misleading way, and that's not really conducive to sort of the democracy and the way that you want people to be making these decisions on the basis of what Judge Roberts' record is.
And, boy, you guys were ready.
Well, I think we've learned to move quickly in this business because one thing that we had seen and took a look at was the tactics that had been used against previous nominees, and we wanted to be prepared for that.
In the past, your group has run a lot of ads, I would say the great majority of them pro-administration. When you say, obviously when a group like FactCheck.org comes in on your side, you're quick to cite it. When they're not necessarily on your side, will you be as quick to listen?
Well, I'm sure we won't have much choice but to listen to them. But you do take commentary like that to heart, because it can go to the credibility of the points that you're trying to make in a debate.
Let's get some listeners in on the conversation again. This is Jane. Jane calling from San Francisco.
Hi. I just wanted to call and say that, you know, attack ads are used so commonly by the Republican Party and not necessarily always truthfully. And I'm a Democrat, and, you know, I don't condone the distruth of it, but I definitely think that we need to use them in getting issues out, and because I think people vote emotionally, and these are emotional things that they talk about in these attack ads.
So, Jane, for you, the broader metaphor is more important than the actual accuracy of the ad?
Well, I think the accuracy is important. However, I think that often, you know, truth is more boring than fiction. But I just think that in a broad picture way, you know, Democrats are you know, they don't generally come out with their fists up and as seemingly willing to do everything that's necessary to win an election or win a vote mm-hmm. that Republicans do. And we need to stop that if we're going to, you know, take control of the what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, Jane. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Ben Ginsburg, is all fair in love and war in politics?
Well, I think accuracy and truthfulness helps. I mean, I think one of the most interesting phenomenon is that while Jane expressed the view of Democrats, I can promise you that Republicans believe that Democrats play far dirtier than we do, and so we sort of always need to be prepared. So the two sides seem to have a mirror image of each other.
Now, it's fair to say that both sides had gathered tinder for a possible fire, a lot of money to spend on advertising, even before the nomination was made. Would it be fair to say that, for the most part, this ammunition had gone unexpended until yesterday?
Yes, I think that is fair to say. And I think that's significant for a number of reasons in the larger context of Judge Roberts' nomination. I mean, the truth of the matter is that he is an outstanding candidate with an outstanding record, whose legal mind and legal acumen has been praised by both Democrats and Republicans alike. And I think that there was a degree of frustration on the left about the fact that Judge Roberts is such an outstanding nomination. I mean, it's interesting that this ad is not at all about the ideology of Roe versus Wade. It is about false and misleading ads, charges designed to inflame. Mm-hmm. And I think that does speak to a frustration and desperation on the left that nobody is buying the sort of general blueprint they tried to throw up, which was the Republican nominee for the Supreme Court would be a crazed individual who they could easily attack. And that's just not the case. The result is the false and misleading ad to try and get something going.
Nancy Keenan of NARAL Pro-Choice America said, at least according to the newspaper, quote, conventional wisdom said the Roberts nomination is a done deal, so it behooves us to make sure the American public knows who John Roberts really is. She called this a wake-up call. Again, these are tactics that both sides have used.
Well, I think it is fair to say that both sides use contrast ads to make sure that people know their position. I think that is absolutely true and accurate. I think that, and I read everything Brooks Jackson and factcheck.org puts out, and I can't recall them ever calling an ad in as plain a language as they did with this NARAL ad false and misleading. And frankly, Senator Leahy is to be applauded for calling for this ad to come off the air. And I really think that many of his colleagues will end up doing that in short order.
Well, Ben Ginsburg, thanks very much for being with us. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Neil. Appreciate it.
Ben Ginsburg, Counsel for Progress for America and Progress for America Voter Fund. Again, Nancy Keenan, president of NARAL Pro-Choice America, was invited, either her or a representative of the organization, and they declined. Confirmation hearings for John Roberts are still several weeks away. There is no lack of effort trying to piece together a picture of how the nominee might rule on major cases if confirmed. David Savage has been combing through some documents, John Roberts' history as a lawyer and a judge, and at least through those documents that have been released, and we'll have more on that in a minute. David Savage is with us here in Studio 3A. He's, of course, the Supreme Court reporter for the Los Angeles Times. I have to begin by asking about these ads. Are they going to have any effect at all on the confirmation process, do you think?
I wouldn't think much effect. The pro-choice groups have been frustrated that they've not been able to find much in John Roberts' record that would really cause problems. I think they wisely picked the right area, which is this type of case, where you had a situation where their human blockades was the tactic in the late 80s, and that's what this case was all about. It wasn't about abortion clinic bombings, but it was about hundreds of people were massing at abortion clinics and blocking patients and doctors and nurses from getting in. And they were very anxious to find some federal remedy, some federal legal weapon that would allow them to get a court order and keep these people away from the front of abortion clinics. And the fact that John Roberts and Ken Starr intervened in this case on behalf of Operation Rescue, I think from their point of view is correctly something that they would want to spotlight. It may be correct that they went overboard by focusing on clinic bombers, but I think they picked an area where at least a lot of pro-choice women around the country would at least be concerned that John Roberts came in on the side of Operation Rescue in this case, and basically saying the federal Ku Klux Klan law doesn't apply. And as it was said, he ended up winning that case. Congress then, by the way, he won the case 1 week before Bill Clinton became president. It was the last week that he was there as a deputy solicitor general. And the victory had the effect of sort of spurring the next Congress to pass a federal law that makes it a crime to obstruct abortion clinics. So in the end, the pro-choice side won by losing in this case.
Before we leave, let's get another caller in on this point. Paula joins us from Tallahassee in Florida.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
I suspect you've seen your fair share of attack ads in Florida the last 6 years or so.
Yes. I moved here from Wyoming. It's been really something. I had the chance to do proofreading of documents too after the legislature was over. It's been very, very interesting.
Hmm.
I wanted to share that I was a member of the Unification Church in the early 70s, and we were victims of attack ads so many times. And I was surprised at how willing people were to believe those things about us, you know, a bunch of kids out there. And it showed me the real power of negativity. And when I hear attack ads today, I go right back to those days where we were being arrested, where we were being kidnapped and put in jail for fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
Church, and you know, the whole brainwashing thing. And I knew from my experience that what they were saying was not true. And just like your speaker before said, the ads that were being promoted were false.
Mm-hmm.
And I think truth is extremely important when you're telling the nation about a person or a group of people.
Sun Myung Moon and the Reverend Sun Myung Moon and the Unification Church are hardly non-controversial. Obviously, some people wanted to explain about him.
Yes, but what I was hearing was so different than my experience. And that's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
That when people put this kind of thing out there, and they know full well that that's not the truth, then they're putting innocent people at a disadvantage.
Okay.
We were young and idealistic, and my personal experience with these attack ads is that I really just have to wonder how much of what's being said over our airways and over the TV is just complete falsehood.
That's,
and being as I'm not in a position to know everything about everything, it takes me an awful lot of time to pursue a story on both sides to make up my own mind. I don't mind an attack ad that makes a person think.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's just to evoke an emotional response or just to cause a group or a person to look bad, I think that that's really unfortunate.
Okay, Paula, thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And David Savage, let's get back to what we know and what we don't know about Judge John Roberts. And this involves the memos that have been released and those that are still being vetted, apparently by White House attorneys at the Ronald Reagan Library in Simi Valley in Simi, California. What's going on?
Well, there are actually three sets of documents at issue. There's the period in 1981 and 82 when Roberts was a young attorney and assistant to Attorney General William French Smith. Those files are at the National Archives, and most of them have been out, and that's what we've been reading about for the last couple weeks. There's a second period from 82 to 86. He worked in the Reagan White House, in the White House Counsel's Office. Those files are at the Reagan Library in Simi Valley. There's an interesting sort of side story here, which was that about four years ago, President Bush issued an executive order that was called Implementation of the Presidential Records Act. The Presidential Records Act, passed after Watergate, basically said that the records of the president are the public's property, not the president's private property. If
this,
you remember,
after President Nixon claimed that he owned the famous tapes.
Absolutely right. President Nixon said, I want the Watergate tapes and the records because they're my records. So the law said that beginning in 1980, with the new president, that the presidential records are the public's property, and the law also presumed that after 12 years, those records would be deemed to be open to the public, except for national security or whatever. 4 years ago, President Bush issued an executive order that said the records cannot be released until the incumbent president gives his approval, and he's entitled to review them for a series of constitutional privileges, one of which says anything regarding legal work or legal advice.
Which seems to imply to the Roberts memos.
Okay, so that memo, that executive order, basically has allowed the president's White House counsel lawyers to go out to Simi Valley and go through all those records to see if there's anything controversial. So those records will not come, be open to the public until the White House gives its approval. Now, they've said that on August 22nd, most of those records are going to be put out. We won't know which ones are not coming out. The third set of documents involves his time at the Solicitor General's office from 89 to 93. The White House has said none of the internal memos involving those documents will be released.
We're talking about Judge Roberts' memos, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And David Savage of the Los Angeles Times is with us. Now, Arlen Specter, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, who's going to be playing an important role in this confirmation process, said that as far as he's concerned, those records when Judge Roberts' time's in the Solicitor General's office, he says those are off the reservation. Those should not be released.
That's right. He weighed in on the side of the White House yesterday on this controversy. It's very important for him to say that because he is the Judiciary Committee chairman. He's the one Republican that could sort of push the White House to release some of those. He said he agrees with the White House argument that it would have a chilling effect on lawyers in the future if they knew that all their internal memos could come out if they were appointed to be a judge or mm-hmm. something like that. So I think the very strong likelihood is that the White House is going to hold tight to that position, and we won't see any of the internal memos from that period, 89 to 93.
In the meantime, it looks as if these White House lawyers are going through the memos that will be released or may be released looking for grenades.
I assume so. I assume that they want to make sure there's nothing in there that's going to be, you know, cause a big problem. Suppose, I'm going to make one up. Suppose there's a memo from John Roberts that says it would be okay for the President Reagan to send missiles secretly to Iran because, after all, he's the commander-in-chief. Leading to Iran-Contra was being cooked up in the Reagan White House between 84, 85, 86. I don't think John Roberts had anything to do with that, and the White House Counsel's Office was not involved in sort of giving the legal authorization. But we don't know. And suppose there is such a memo, the White House counsel's people might say, well, we don't really want to release this one to the public.
Too delicate national security.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. At the same time, what are the set of issues that might have been covered, again, we don't know because we've not seen the documents, by this second set of documents when John Roberts was the Deputy Solicitor General working for then Solicitor General Ken Starr back in the first President Bush's administration?
Well, those are potentially the most interesting because just of the big issues. The obvious one is Ken Starr and John Roberts urged the Supreme Court to overturn Roe versus Wade and the right to abortion. I think Democrats would like to know, was that John Roberts' strong view? Was it perhaps Ken Starr's view and that he was going along with it? Or maybe it was the White House's view. There's a half dozen interesting areas on the environment and a whole series of cases that were school busing, civil rights, where the Solicitor General is the federal government's representative before the Supreme Court. But in addition to that, as we were discussing earlier in the abortion clinic case, the Solicitor General is free to intervene in other cases and sort of take a position to argue an issue before the Supreme Court. Ken Starr and Roberts jumped into a lot of interesting cases around the country, and it would be very interesting to know how much of that was John Roberts' personal view and how much of it was the White House or the Attorney General said, this is an issue we ought to press in the Supreme Court.
David Savage, thanks as always.
Thank you, Neil.
David Savage, Supreme Court reporter for the Los Angeles Times. He was nice enough to join us here in Studio 3A. When we come back from a short break, we'll discuss tonight's return of baseball's Rafael Palmeiro as baseball's long saga with steroids takes yet another turn. And we'll take your calls about the 10-day suspension. Was it adequate? Is baseball doing enough? And what does it do to the legacy of Rafael Palmeiro? 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. Back after the break, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.